We're going to go back and follow the donkey. Luke chapter 10, verses 30 through 35, very familiar story. In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to a place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds and pouring oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." So this is not necessarily going to be a story on the parable of the Good Samaritan, but I do think it's kind of cool that as Jesus was putting this very important parable out there for everybody to think about, he happened to include a donkey in the story, which gave us the opportunity to kind of stop by and take a look at the story. I guess the willingness to walk while your wounded neighbor rides your donkey makes you a good neighbor, right? Of course, what made him a great neighbor is the fact he was unconcerned about being taken advantage of and more concerned about taking advantage of a moment to show kindness and compassion, regardless the cost to himself. Reminds me of somebody else that I know, right? His name was Jesus. Peter tells us in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 24, "He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sin and live for righteousness. By his wounds, we are healed." So we arrive at the Good Samaritan, and it's a great story, right? I mean, it's one that if you're a church rat, which is basically somebody that grew up in church, okay, if you're a church rat and you grew up in church, I'm guaranteeing you hear that story probably at least once a year. You know, a minister drags it out or becomes part of a Sunday school lesson. It's a very popular lesson for VBS, and it's a great story, but I just want to let you know something. That is crisis mode neighborliness. Now, I've been in church most of my life, and I have discovered churches are great in crisis mode. A disaster strikes, and our hearts go out. Think back last summer. Those hurricanes came through. We heard about a need, and everybody pitched in to meet needs down in North Carolina for Christians that we had no idea who they were. Disaster strikes, and our hearts go out, and there's some huge need in our body, our church body. Well, we open up the checkbooks, right? I mean, if we hear of a need and we know that it really is a need and we're willing to open the checkbook to help that member of our body, some need that's not financial comes up, and you know what? We just find out a person is struggling. We swarm like bees. Man, we hear about a struggle or one of the people in our body that is out there, and we just can't help it. People pass away, we take meals. People are hurting, we try to send cards. We try desperately to be good neighbors. But that's crisis mode neighborhood. What about our everyday neighborliness? Just so you know, donkeys are really great neighbors. They tend to have a good relationship with most other creatures that aren't trying to eat them. Okay, they're not really fond of being eaten, just so you know. But if you're not eating them, they pretty much will live with anybody. They tend to be very social with other donkeys. I came to Wednesday night study, and Patty had a picture of some donkeys that were roaming the street where they went on vacation. And they were just roaming the street, and they were roaming together because donkeys are social. They don't really want to be all by themselves. They were designed to be together. They look after one another. That's part of who they are. If you're the mama donkey and you have a baby donkey, and you know what? You're not raising that donkey on your own. The entire pack, herd, helps you protect and raise that donkey. And the weird thing about donkeys, we've been over this, they are protectors of flocks and herds. Even if the flock or the herd that they're living among isn't more donkeys, if they're living with a bunch of cows, the cattle becomes their family. If they're living with a bunch of sheep, the sheep become their family. They tend to go into a situation, and whoever they hang out with, that's who family is. And that maybe puts them kind of more like a church than we think, right? I mean, isn't that kind of the philosophy about the church? You are my church family is what we call this. And to my knowledge, I don't think I'm physically related to anybody except for my wife and my sons. So we're not blood kin, but I consider you my family. So that's the donkeys. The problem is when it comes to us, things work a little bit different, right? Because I'm not a donkey. Sometimes I can be stubborn as a mule, but I am not a donkey. And so as a person, what happens when my neighbor lets me down? What about when my neighbor's actions receive praise while mine seem to go unnoticed? What about when my neighbor hurts me or my neighbor wronged me? How about when I hurt my neighbor? Or what about when I just don't like my neighbor? We just don't seem to be eye to eye on anything. Matter of fact, maybe they even get on my very last nerve. Now it becomes a lot harder, right? Because we're not talking about a person that's bleeding and dying on the side of the road. We're not talking about a crisis. We're talking about every single day the people that I interact with that are my neighbors. How do I live with them? Because these questions are real questions, and they tend to tear us apart, divide us, cause us to argue, cause us to split apart, and honestly, it cause us not to be very neighborly. So today, we're going to look at five donkey laws. Now, here's what I mean by a donkey law. This was a law that was handed out to the nation of Israel. And all five of them talk about a donkey. Okay? And so there are five donkey laws for neighborly living. So let's get started. How about we just start right with the big one, right at the beginning. No coveting allowed. Exodus chapter 20, verse 17 says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor." So covet is one of those things that we kind of confuse what it is. So again, good dictionary definition. Covet is just an excessive obsession, desire to possess what belongs to another. And when we begin to talk about covet, there are two basic emotions that run beneath coveting. And the first one is lust. Now, usually we talk about lust from a sexual aspect, but lust really isn't about sexual aspect. It is about the idea of intense longing or the word craving. That means I can actually lust after a hamburger, which I have done in my life. Okay, I can lust after a nice, big, juicy steak, which I have done in my life. In other words, I just want it, and I have to have it, and I don't have one in mind, and I start thinking about, I want. Of course, lust conflicts with our interest with our neighbor when we get into the idea of envy. Which envy is just painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, joined with a desire to possess that same advantage. So, I'm looking at you, I want a steak, you have a steak, I'm envious because I like steak, right? You have something that I want, and I begin to look at that and say, well, I want it. And now I found the solution on how to get what I want, right?
That's called covet.
Now, doesn't matter whether or not I actually went and took your steak off your plate, which would have been an interesting thing, right? I just walked over, hey, thanks, this is mine. You can order another one, right? That's not what covet is. Covet is, I just began to say, you have it, I want it, and I'm envious because you have it. And well, that starts out the idea of coveting. It's important to remember that the command lists relationships and possessions, right? Donkeys, wives, servants, what have you. But it could also be social status or praise. You could be looking at somebody else and saying, man, they're getting all the attention. They're the person that everybody, I want that. You can actually covet those same things. It's a powerful enemy against neighborly living. Did you know coveting actually was a big part of the original sin? Think about it. God created the tree of knowledge of good and evil. He created all the other trees, and he looked at Adam and Eve and said, I tell you what, you can eat of all the other 50,000 versions of variety there are, just stay away from this one. This one is mine. And when the snake showed up and Satan possessed the snake, it's not like the snake started out saying, doesn't that fruit look yummy? Because they're like, no, that's not going to cut it. Now, eventually she got to that point, and eventually Adam and Eve both got to that point. But you understand, he started off with, let me tell you why God doesn't want you to have that. He don't want you to have that because he knows if you have that, then you'll be just like him. Ooh, and there's the covet. I want what God has. I want to have the knowledge that God has. I want to have all the stuff that God has. I want that. And now with that coveting in place, now we look at the fruit and be like, you know what? That kind of looks yummy. Man, wouldn't that taste good next to my steak? And they reached out and they took the fruit and they ate. That's coveting. That's how it gets started. So as we begin to talk about this idea of coveting, you need to understand what happened. As I began to covet, I began to figure out how can I get it, right? And then once I began to figure out how to get it, it means I have to take the focus off myself and tear somebody else down. James chapter 4, verse 2 talks about this in a church setting. You desire, there's the covet, but you do not have. So you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. Now, I haven't figured this one out. You know why I don't usually ask God why, when I'm coveting, to give me what I want? Because I know exactly what God's going to tell me. You don't need it. No. No. I'm not going to give you that. Because it's going to become a stumbling block between me and you. Therefore, in our coveting relationship, we must remember the Jesus treasure rule. Restore for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. You know what? When I think about all the things that I want, I may never have what my neighbor has. My house may not be as big. My car may not be as great. But you know what? God has blessed me a lot. And what I do have, I should be putting to work for his kingdom. Because that solves my coveting issue. So no coveting and take responsibility is our next law. Exodus chapter 21, verses 33 through 34. If anyone uncovers a pit or digs one and fails to cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the one who opened the pit must pay their owner for the loss and take the dead animal in exchange. So please note, the person dug a pit and he wasn't trying to trap a donkey. He had no intentions of hurting this donkey. And it doesn't tell us why the pit was left uncovered. Maybe they're just lazy and they felt like, I don't feel like it. Maybe they just forgot, right? I mean, I've had those moments. I got here this morning, walked in, Rich said good morning, and I said, I forgot to get the donuts. So I ran all the way back over to Dunkin' Donut and got the 2 dozen of donuts. This Donut Sunday, this is the Sunday we celebrate the birthdays in the church. And so I went back and I got them because I just forgot. That happens, right? Maybe, just maybe, an emergency came up. Maybe they were digging the pit and they got the call and so-and-so went to the hospital. They're like, they just dropped their stuff and they ran. So the reason the pit was dug and how it got left uncovered is unimportant. The point is the donkey fell in the pit. And he died. He fell in the pit and we now have a dead donkey. And the scripture very clearly says that the person that dug the pit needs to take responsibility. Now, wait a minute, it was an accident. Accidents happen, right? Accidents happen, but when there is an accident, you still have the need to take responsibility. And responsibility is not looking at your neighbor and saying you should have taken better care of your donkey and not let them wander into my pit, right? That's blaming. That's not responsibility. That's you looking at them saying, it's your fault the donkey was. I have no responsibility. If you just kept your donkey on a leash, they wouldn't have wandered into my pit and we'd be all good. And that's not the point. The point is sometimes we unintentionally hurt our neighbor. And the answer is not to tell them to get over it. The answer is to take responsibility. The law said to pay the owner for the loss. So that means you have to pay for the donkey that got killed in your pit. And then what a picture. Not only do you have to pay for the donkey, you're the one that has to get down the pit and get the dead donkey out of your pit and take the donkey somewhere else and bury the donkey. So it wasn't just enough that you pay for it. It took some effort on your part. That is, if you want to be a good neighbor. I guess I could have just handed them some money and said, you take care of your own donkey. But no, that's not responsibility. And please note, sometimes you just can't fix it. And we're going to discuss that in just a moment. But our third law is make restitution. Exodus chapter 22, verse 4. If the stolen animal is found alive in their possession, whether ox or donkey or sheep, they must pay back double. All right, now I've got your attention because we're talking about paying double for something. And the important thing to remember is, please notice, it did not say you stole a donkey. It merely says that you were found in possession of a stolen donkey. Also, please notice, the donkey is still alive. Okay, so we're not talking about a dead donkey here. We're talking about a donkey that is still alive. And so just give him the donkey back, right? No harm, no foul. You donkey got stolen. Okay, yeah, I was in possession with it. You just take the donkey and we're all square until you start reading the law. Because the law says, I'm supposed to pay double for that donkey. Why? That makes no sense to me. Why am I supposed to pay? I didn't steal the donkey. Well, you get what happens, right? Like responsibility, the issue forces you to look out for your neighbor. If I know my neighbor's donkey is stolen, and suddenly I'm walking down a back alley and there's a really good donkey deal out there for sale, then don't you think I should stop for a moment and say, you know, that donkey looks sort of familiar. I believe I've seen that donkey somewhere. Where did you find this donkey? And in that moment, we can look out for our neighbor, right? Of course, the easy thing would be to turn a blind eye to it and say, oh, all donkeys look alike, right? So I can buy this one, and he's 50% off, so I can take some of the money I saved and give a little money to God, right? And so I'm getting a good deal, and then when we find out it's my neighbor's stolen donkey, well, now we have a problem, because if I get caught, it isn't going to cost me just what I paid for the donkey. It's going to cost me what I paid for the donkey doubled. It puts the responsibility on us. And that is kind of the focus of all of these laws. Being a good neighbor is not about being nice, okay? We always think just being nice to our neighbor is what being a good neighbor is. You know, I'll get your mail in when you go out on town. I won't walk in your yard. You don't walk on my grass. You know what? I won't let my cat, I don't own a cat, but you won't let your cat wander through my yard. That's being a good neighbor. Because I'm being nice. Of course, these laws make it a little bit different, right? Because really being a good neighbor is about putting myself above my neighbor. I like these laws, right? This makes me make neighborly living a whole lot harder. So I'm supposed to know coveting. I'm supposed to take responsibility. And I'm supposed to be willing to make restitution. But those aren't even the hard ones. Those are the easy ones. How about we talk about this word in our neighborhood? Forgiveness. Exodus chapter 10, verses 22, verses 10 through 13. If anyone gives a donkey, all right, an ox, a sheep, or any other animal to their neighbor for safekeeping, and it dies or is injured or is taken away while no one is looking, the issue between them will be settled by taking an oath before the Lord that the neighbor did not lay hands on the other person's property. The owner is to accept this, and no restitution is required. But if the animal was stolen from the neighbor, restitution must be made to the owner. If it was torn to pieces by a wild animal, the neighbor shall bring in the remains as evidence and shall not be required to pay for the animal. Just so you know, there is a really cool story about the donkey of forgiveness next year. For this year, let's just deal with the one that's right here because we're at that situation. I can't fix this, folks. The law of responsibility dealt with an accidentally dead donkey. Nobody intended for this animal to die. The law of restitution dealt with a stolen but alive donkey, right? This is a little bit of a different take on the whole thing. Because here we're talking about a dead or even injured or possibly stolen donkey that was placed in another's care. Ooh. So that means I'm going on vacation, right? And I can't look after my donkey while I'm on vacation, so I take my donkey over to my neighbor and I say, will you look after my donkey while I'm gone? And the neighbor says, sure, I'll take care of your donkey. So I hand the donkey over to them, and I go on vacation, and I come back, and something's happened to the donkey. I'm upset. I mean, I hope you get it by now. In this case, this is a metaphor for something very abstract like trust. I trusted you with my donkey. I trusted you. How could you let it die? How could you let it get injured? How could you let it get stolen? I trusted you. And at that moment, we have stepped out of this idea of all of the other things, except for do know that restitution clause is still in effect. In other words, if the donkey's still alive and just gets stolen and they find the stolen donkey, you're still responsible to pay double for losing that donkey in a theft. But, that's the law of responsibility, also the law of restitution. So this just can't be. I think I'm behind in my slides. Nope. Okay, here we go. I'm back where I'm supposed to be now. Sorry. All right, so in this case, it just can't be undone. You have to take responsibility. You have to do the restitution for it. You have to do the things that you need to do, but you understand the person that takes offense takes the responsibility. So in other words, I am responsible, so I can't just say, oh, well, that's all it is. I'm sorry I lost your donkey. I can't move on. But at the end, the person that lost the donkey, they're going to have to forgive. Did you notice what they did? They went through a process. They went through the thing, they came and they searched to make sure you weren't hiding the donkey on your property. They did a search to find the donkey to see if it was stolen. And then they went out in the woods and they said, okay, did we find a corpse? Maybe it wandered off and a wild animal killed it. But once you have proven that the neighbor did not purposefully injure or lose your donkey, now you have to forgive them. And that's hard. Because when I have to forgive somebody, I hate to tell you this, things are never going to be the same again. They aren't. Every time I see you, I can forgive you, but you think I'm going to loan you a second, trust you with a second donkey? They're never going to be the same again. Nowhere does it say, as the person that has to forgive, that I'm going to forget. You know why? I can't do it. I can want to. I can forgive you. But the idea of forgive and forget is not biblical in the way that we think about things. You just have to forgive. And I guess the question is why? They should have taken better care of what I gave them. Because you've been forgiven. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. I forgive you because I am forgiven. Jesus tells a whole other parable about this, about a guy that couldn't forgive a little bit, even though he's been forgiven much. The Lord's Prayer, forgive us our debts. What's the condition clause of that? As we forgive debts of others. Okay, so no coveting, take responsibility, provide restitution, and if I have to, forgive. You know, I haven't even gotten to the hardest one yet. It's that fifth law that's the doozy. Because the fifth law says, I have to love my enemy. Exodus chapter 23, verse 4 and 5. If you come across your enemy's ox or donkey wandering off, be sure to return it. If you see the donkey of someone who hates you falling down under its load, do not leave it there. Be sure to help them with it. Wow. And as I look at this, I realize there are just people in this world that we're just not going to get along. I hate to use the word enemy, but I'm sure I have a few in my life because I can be an obnoxious person, and I'm sure there are many people I've gotten on their very last nerve, and you know what? They've gotten on my very last nerve. There are others that if you leave me in a room with them in a confined space with them for very long, something bad is going to happen. Okay? It's not that we just don't do things. Maybe we just have a difference of views or opinions. Maybe we have some kind of history that while I have forgiven, it just makes things complicated. Maybe again, it could just be a personality conflict. You know what? We just don't see things the way we should, and we drive each other crazy. The point is, I don't have a good relationship with these people. So I'm walking down the road and I see their donkey wandering. I'm just going to say, nah. No. I'm supposed to stop what I'm doing and go and find and get their donkey, leash it up, and take it back to them. If I'm wandering down the road and they've been in an accident, they should have been nicer to me. Oh, no. It says you're supposed to stop and, like the Good Samaritan, help them. See, just because we're not going to be buddies doesn't mean that we're not neighbors. And the other thing is, I'm still supposed to be concerned about you. I'm still supposed to help you. This is the entire point why Jesus picked the Good Samaritan in this story. Because I have no other way to say this. When the Jews looked at Samaritans, they were a bunch of half-breed people that didn't belong in their land. And they wanted to get them out because that was their land. Wow. And he's the hero of the story. We may not like each other, but I'm supposed to love you just like God loves you. Isn't that what Jesus says? Love your enemies, right? So I guess I should ask myself a very real question. Am I my brother's donkey's keeper? Now, I'm sure you recognize that verse, that little statement. This was off of a sermon series that Rich did last year. I'm in Luke chapter 10, verse 27. He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. I want you to make sure you see the word that I highlighted. It's an and not an or. So it's not Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your strength, all your mind, all your soul, or love your neighbor as yourself. It's an and. Which just means that they are intertwined and connected. Therefore, if I'm doing part A, part B should be a natural consequence. So that means if I can't love my neighbor as myself, the issue isn't my neighbor. The issue is that I'm not loving the Lord my God with all of my heart, all my mind, all my strength, and all of my soul. The issue is I have a disconnect. See, when you read this whole story of the Good Samaritan, it comes down to who is my neighbor. And the important thing to know is this man was a lawyer. He was somebody that was a lover of the law. And this is a great stopping point because we just want to make sure that you understand the laws aren't set aside just because Jesus came and died on the cross. Matter of fact, Jesus said, "Do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come to abolish. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." And it's also good for us to remember that we are God's neighbor. And when he was coming to us and going to that cross, he demonstrated what it meant to be a God-like neighbor. I guess metaphorically speaking, he put us on his donkey. He carries us all the way with our brokenness, unconcerned about what it cost him. Because what it cost him was his life. And when this man was beginning to have this discussion, he finished it, and then Jesus said, "Do you get it?" The man said, "Yeah, I get it. The Samaritan is my neighbor." Jesus' simple answer for the man and us is, "Do this and you will live." And I just want to make sure you see the commandment clearly. Love your neighbor as yourself. We're not supposed to just like them or feel sorry for them or even tolerate them. That's the word that we like to use these days. Oh, no. I'm supposed to love them. How am I supposed to love them, you might be asking? How about John chapter 15, verses 12 through 17? "My command," this is Jesus speaking, "is this. Love each other as I have loved you." Oh, wait a minute. I'm already not liking this. "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you have done what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you might go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last. And so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other." And when I say those words, loving means that I am not waiting for an opportunity to show Christ, but instead I am looking for an opportunity to look out for my neighbor's donkey. Wow. How many of our world problems would be solved if we just applied these five laws? See, maybe if I follow the donkey and I apply the laws, maybe I would get a chance to show Christ to them. That's pretty cool, don't you? The question is, are you willing to follow the donkey? So earlier today, we sung a song, "People Need the Lord." It's a little chorus that's in your hymnal. If you turn to the page that's listed there in your bulletin, you'll see it's not very long. Did you know it had verses? I'd like to, for my conclusion today, read you the verses of the song of "People Need the Lord." Here they are. "Every day they pass me by. I can see it in their eyes. Empty people filled with care, headed who knows where. On they go through private pain, living fear to fear. Laughter hides their silent cries. Only Jesus hears." Second verse reads, "We are called to take his light to a world where wrong seems right. What could be too great a cost for sharing life with one who's lost. Through his love, our hearts can feel all their grief they bear. They must hear the words of life. Only we can share. Folks, we're in a world that has basically abandoned the idea of compassion. And where is that compassion supposed to come from? It's when we begin neighborly living. It's when we choose to follow the donkey.